This episode of the Feudal Podcast contains material that might be considered somewhat more adult in theme. That is to say, we're talking about French movies that have sex in them. So if you're a grandmother, go put on your Doors' Greatest Hits and don't listen to this podcast. Okay, this is the Feudal Podcast, and we are doing a special one with my friend Daniel. Say hello, Daniel.
How's it going?
And introduce yourself.
I'm Daniel.
And his girlfriend?
I have a name.
Yeah, you should introduce yourself.
I'm Lolly, but I'm an independent person also, apart from being Daniel's girlfriend.
Okay. So, today we're going to talk about what they want to talk about, which might have very little to do with...
Futility?
With futility. If you want to email us... The Feudal Podcast, you can send an email to feudalpodcast@gmail.com, and you should do that. You guys had this topic, this theme that you wanted to talk about that involved something you were calling, was it female perversion?
So we watched three movies.
Mm-hmm.
There are movies in the periphery there.
Yeah, there were a couple of other movies, but two of the main movies that she had seen before that we wanted to watch, and then there was this third movie that was just a really good movie. So one of them was Romance, and I'm trying to find it on IMDb here.
It's there,
1999. Yep. No, I don't see it.
It's there.
Can't you just type in Romance?
Oh, but it's going to be named something
under title
or something.
Yeah, but they usually translate they give you the English translation.
I'll edit
all this out.
And the second one, and the second one was Two Guys and a Girl.
And a pizza place?
No, two girls and a guy.
Two girls and a guy.
And a pizza place?
No. Not at a pizza place.
Question mark?
And two girls and a guy had Robert Downey Jr. and it had...
Heather Graham.
And it had... what's her name? I've seen that one, actually.
Did you like it?
It was strange. I thought that it was pretty... I kind of hated the women in it because in the end, he's a total bastard. Then he shows up and convinces them that they're both being stupid, right?
Sort of, but one of them leaves and one of them stays.
I don't remember
getting the sense that the other one was going to... Yeah, I just remembered feeling like I hated...
The thing about that movie is that there's no spoilers because it's spoiled at the very, very beginning, so...
Is it because the ending is the beginning or something?
No, it's not. It's just that the plot, there's no real plot. It's just a character study.
Yeah, it felt like kind of... It was probably based on like a stage play or
it
something.
It is based on a stage play.
Yeah, it really felt that way.
I cannot find Romance anywhere, though. It wasn't made in India.
No, it was not made in India. It was made in France.
So Romance was famous because it was one of the movies, one of the sort of mainstream movies, but that showed actual penetration in intercourse scenes, which is very important.
Like Short Bus, that new one that just came out, made in Canada by the guy that made... I don't know. I don't remember his damn name now. I'm completely blanking on it, but apparently it had all kinds of graphic sexual activity in it.
So I wouldn't say the stuff in Romance was particularly graphic, and I don't remember any actual vaginal penetration, although...
But that's what you just said, is that it showed penetration.
They have a birthing scene.
They have the birthing scene, and they have a couple of blowjob scenes in the movie.
You see the birthing scene?
Yes.
So when someone's giving birth?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so...
How did you find that, and I couldn't find that?
Because I'm a genius. Catherine Briat is the main actress. No, that's the director and
that's
writer.
That's the director and writer, yeah.
And Caroline Doucet. They have some... Yeah, Caroline Doucet is the main actress.
I didn't particularly care for this movie. Because
you didn't want to see birth? In a non-like biology health class kind of context?
I would actually see births outside of a biology health class kind of context, but... but this is a movie that she's shown to other of her... male callers to varying degrees of success, and she showed it to me and I sort of didn't really care because it was a French movie and
mm-hmm.
I really like French movies.
So Caroline Doucet plays a school teacher, like a third grade teacher or something, and she is dating a model, an actor and a model, and About three months into their relationship, they stop having sex completely. And he, like, refuses...
At his request,
he refuses to have sex with her. And she, like, come on to him and stuff, and they don't...
What's the motivation for that, though?
On his part?
Yeah.
Well, he has various... I mean, he explains it differently in every sort of scene, but the point is that he doesn't want to.
He just doesn't want to have sex at all,
no,
or he doesn't want to have sex with
he
her?
He does not want to have sex at all.
Okay.
Well, he claims he doesn't want to have sex at all. It's not really clear in the movie whether or not he does. Has sex with other women. So she then embarks on a quest to sort of get back at him, but not really get back at him, just to sort of have sex. And she sort of tells us, she drops hints about it to him sort of when they talk about it. And so this is the story of the various sort of the chain of events that happens once she starts doing
the
that.
Crazy adventures that she goes on in her search to have sex.
Sort of. And I mean, she doesn't always even seek it out. It's just sort of she allows situations to occur where... She, the first time she does, but then after that she sort of allows situations to occur where she's having sex with other people.
And then there's sometimes other against lines. Her will, sometimes...
sometimes against her will, sometimes not, but...
But she sets up situations.
Well, so she walks down a dark alley at 3 a.m. where she knows there's, like rapist fiends
on purpose. Well, she walks, like, there's a scene where she's walking up the stairs to go to her apartment, and some guy stops her and says, I'll give you, like, $20 if I can eat you out. And she's like, all right. And
but is that against her will, or is that just prostitution?
That's it happens at first, and then he rapes her after that. But she sort of... In the scene, she's sort of... Clearly, she doesn't want to, but then at the end, she's like, you better fucking pay me. Yeah. And then he just walks away. And then she sits in the stairs waiting for her boyfriend to come home.
Crying.
Yeah.
So it's some kind of moral decay theme.
But she waits until he gets home, and then she sits out on the stairs for another hour so that she comes home later than he does to sort of have a moral victory or whatever.
Well, how's that a victory in any respect?
Because then
over her boyfriend who isn't giving her sex, and she sort of wants
so, but because she's gone, she figures he'll assume she had without having sex.
So her boyfriend is also a model, but he has a really small penis, and so this is why sort of a lot of the sex scenes.
Does he have an eye patch too?
No. Anything else? He had a peg leg and a yeah. hand. And
that'd be awesome.
No. He has a small, but this is a lot of the sex scenes are graphic, but they're graphic in ways that are sort of plot relevant. Uh-huh. At least I think.
Yeah, they are plot relevant.
So.
Because she talks about it, like she talks about like the majesty of the, you know.
So Lolly showed this to me and sort of wanted me to talk about it, and I, for me at least, it takes me a while to sort of
process all of that
But any movie to come to any kind of.
Yeah, but this one is front-loaded with all this, like, shock value stuff. Like, anything, if it's got, like graphic depictions of, like, rape and just general, like, sexual depravity on some level, especially because of the fact that you've got to juxtapose probably with she's a third-grade teacher. It's, like, shot of her, like tearful after being raped, and then, like, next shot is her, like, teaching, like, a little kid how to read
really,
or something.
And
right?
She really starts losing interest in her job throughout the movie.
It sounds like she's bored to begin with, yeah, and that's part of the whole problem, right?
So there's a scene where she's, like, writing on the board, and her the class is sort of giggling sort of quietly, but you can't really tell what's going on, and since we're not French, you guys can't tell what's happening. And the principal of the school walks in the principal of the school walks in, because there's another scene where she's late, and he, like, is teaching the class for her, but in any case, and then they have to go talk, and she ends up doing all sorts of sexually depraved things with him, but... When she's sitting down to talk to him about it, she's like, oh, I'm really bad at spelling. So she's not even... And she teaches, like, a third grade class. She teaches them reading and math and all that.
Mm-hmm.
She can't even, like, spell, right? And so...
She can't spell on a third grade level?
Well, she was, like, writing a dictation on the board. Mm-hmm. And it was misspelled in parts, apparently. Oh, wow. I don't speak French, so...
So there's some backstory on her not probably wanting to be a third grade teacher, right?
Probably not. But nobody, it doesn't really... The thing is, none of that...
none of the character stuff is relevant in this story, then, is it?
The biography of her... Like, her general biography is completely irrelevant. It's a complete study of sort of this facet of her life. Of
just being bored.
Sexual life. Well, but it's loyalty. No, but it's like a loyalty issue. She thinks that if you won't fuck her, then... Sorry. I'm not allowed to say that.
There's been no cursing on this podcast until now, right? No.
Basically, she feels like if her boyfriend won't have sex with her, she's like not, you know, she's a failure or something.
Even though he's not breaking up with her.
I told Dan when I mercilessly forced him to watch this movie that I don't like the character. I don't like the main character.
She's sort of unlikable.
She's sort of not likable, and she's sort of stupid.
But you sounds like you're still going to empathize with somebody that's like been raped and stuff, right?
Yeah, no, because she sort of wants to do it. And so, but in any case,
she hooks up with this older guy who's sort
the principal
of
principal of the school.
He's the principal of the school. Yeah. Who's sort of
that's bad news.
No. Well, he's sort of a what's the masculine dot for dominatrix?
I don't know, Dominator?
Dominator. And he ties her up and stuff, and she has this little breakdown in one of the scenes where she...
Where she's tied up?
Where she's tied up. And
she starts thinking, crying. Maybe this is a bad idea.
A bad idea. She's crying, but she seemed to be very satisfied after she stopped crying in that scene.
Well, like somebody going on a roller coaster that's really scared as it's clicking up to the top. Yeah, but then when they've gone through it and they've had experienced the crazy adrenaline thing,
she made him stop halfway through. But a lot of it has to do with her just sort of being dissatisfied and sort of trying to find ways of satisfying herself because she's not satisfied with her boyfriend or whatever.
So it sounds like she's just bored with her life.
Yeah.
It sounds like the boyfriend is putting it on him, but that's not really relevant either
because she doesn't even have a life.
But you've got to understand the psychology of the character to get at any sense of... I mean, even if it's a psychotic action...
She's not particularly multidimensional.
Okay.
So that's why she's not likable. She's sort of stupid.
Yeah.
And, she's sort of stupid. She's sort of naive. She's attractive, but sort of in this... I don't know. She's an attractive actress, but like the character is not particularly attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting sort of examination of infidelity and sort of the role of sex in relationships and all of that. And so I find it interesting. I don't like the characters. I don't even necessarily like the movie in sort of any sort of like... I think this is a wonderful movie, but I do think it's very...
You treat it like some sort of psychological test to put other people through and see how they assess it.
So there are people who react to this really, really badly and are sort of like completely rejected and sort of say, this is stupid and she's just a slut and whatever.
Which it sounds like is valid.
Sort of, but if that's your commentary but if that's your commentary on what's going on there, then that's...
You're missing a level.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's your commentary on it, right? Well, you missed that level, right?
Yeah. But you also want to say that it says something. So what do you think it says about infidelity that's important there?
No, it doesn't say anything. Well, I mean, it says something about infidelity, but it says something about sex, more importantly.
It says something about how women think about sex.
Yes. She is... there are no qualities to her that break sort of typical understandings of gender roles, but not sort of cooking and cleaning, but sort of the psychology of females.
Okay.
Which is that they're sort of clingy, but then they're sort of... vengeful and they need physical affirmation and other sorts of affirmation and sort of she doesn't.
There's no Ripley-ism.
One of the reasons she doesn't appear particularly intelligent or complicated is because she, on my view of this movie, is that because she's completely female. She has no sort of.
So maybe it seems almost like maybe the film is a criticism of that kind of behavior and that kind of action. Like
it
on
seems
women.
To be written to be sort of sympathetic to her though because her boyfriend appears to be very sort of. Callous and vaguely
prickish.
Like, yeah, he's definitely prickish. And then he like go out with her to clubs and dance with other women and sort of tell her about how it's just about the chase and it's not.
So but she's not completely female because like she's a teacher but she's bad at it and there's no you don't see her being sort of nurturing or anything like that.
That might be just a statement of the fact that that's not part of female qualities or whatever.
Or it's usually considered one though, right? Sort of a nurturing side.
She is nurturing because she like has a kid in it, and she sort of.
Oh, she has a child
at the very end.
At the very end, she has a child.
Oh, that's the birthing scene,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So she does have that, and she's. I mean, you see her sort of wanting the kid and wanting you, and she would have sort of been a good girlfriend if he wasn't. It seems as if it would have been just a normal relationship in which she was feminine and all that, if it wasn't for the fact that he wasn't having sex with her.
Sounds like it would have been quite a burden on him at some point if she had all these quote-unquote typical feminine clingy problems and so forth. She would have found another excuse. She was bored with her life.
Okay, but it's not a classical female, right? It's supposed to be a contemporary French female. And part of the issue there is that where normally, like, I don't know if you know Ian McEwan's this recent novel on Chesil Beach where he, well, in any case, the point is that things like that are examinations of women in the 50s or whatever, or women back in the day, where women are completely ignorant about sex, and this is sort of not part... They don't care about sex, they care about
romance.
Pre-sexual
revolution.
So the movie is called Romance.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little romance in the
movie. That's the irony of it.
It's not a Jane Austen novel.
It's not a Jane Austen novel, and it's not about women like that. It's about contemporary women, and it's about the role sort of straight-up sex-like fucking plays in their psychology, which is a major role, maybe not 50 years ago, but certainly today.
What's the line about not having a face?
What do you say, the face and the cunt don't match? You can't have it both or whatever?
Or a cunt shouldn't have a face.
A cunt shouldn't have a face. Yeah. Right. Shouldn't go with a face.
So she showed me this movie in the context of talking about cheating and sort of infidelity. Lolly has a general opinion that cheating is inevitable in any relationship, and sort of
Not that any particular person, but that one of the people will probably stray at some point in any relationship.
And she was trying to point to this movie as sort of a female take on what reasons women would cheat in a relationship like that. And she contrasted that with Two Guys and a Girl, which is the Two Girls and a Guy.
Two Girls and a Guy.
Two Girls and a Guy. There are two girls and one guy.
And one guy.
And no pizza place.
No pizza place. And I thought this was a terrible movie.
Yeah, I've seen this movie, actually.
And it just wasn't very interesting at all.
It was a lot of, like, sort of bohemian, hipstery, New York-type...
Sort of.
Off-Broadway play, talk about people's relationship stuff. The thing is, for me, if a story like that, or where it's, like, based on a screenplay, like something like Glengarry Glen Ross, mm-hmm. that's based on... It's a lot of talking, but the characters are compelling and interesting or mm-hmm. complex, or even if they're not complex, there's humor to it. The problem I had with this film, with the two girls and a guy, was that both of the women seem like their whole lives are revolving around this one jerk.
False.
Yeah.
And then when he shows up, he manages to convince both of them that their whole first hour is going on. And rather than both just telling him to go to hell, which is all they should have done, he should have shown up, they told him to go to hell, and then that should have been the end of the movie. You know, kind of like Miami Vice, where it just ends when he walks into the hospital. Mm-hmm. It sort of just seems like it speaks poorly. It seems like it was a misogynistic film to me. Well, because of the way that he kind of gets one over on the women, and stupid.
So I think you're wrong here, and I think it's right that Lolly showed this after Romance, or at least in the context of that, because I think it's wrong to look at this movie as from the male perspective, from Robert Downey.
Well, I can only look at... I'm looking from his perspective. I'm looking at it from their perspective, because they're the first two characters you see,
so,
right?
In a real relationship, in a real long-term relationship, and that movie was like 10 months or something that they'd both been dating. Since March.
Well, one of them was sooner than the other, though, right?
No,
they weren't at the exact same time.
They met in the same, yeah.
And 10-month-long relationship, that's a relatively long relationship. It's almost a year. At that age, people are sort of, after that, they decide to get married.
Yeah, they were like in their mid-20s, or what were
yeah,
they supposed
they're
to
be?
Late 20s.
Yeah, and the point is that nobody really walks away. Nobody really walks away like you're describing. Nobody in a long-term relationship like that walks away, ever. So
no Godzilla factor there, huh?
Well,
after you defeat Monster Zero, what are you going to do?
No Samurai Jack situation there, huh? no Yojimbo there.
But moreover, so I think it's just plainly true.
That's the title.
And I think it's trivially true that the movie is realistic. Because it is. I mean, in terms of how people, like, sort of relate to another relationship.
Are continually attached.
Even after cheating, they sort of still have to get their... Right, and so this is the thing. One of them does walk out, right? The brunette.
Ditzy, yeah.
The ditzy brunette does walk out. She stays and she says her piece, mm-hmm. and then she leaves, and that's all. And that's sort of, that's about right, right? You don't just say, go to hell, bye. You say, this is all the shit I have to say about you, you're an asshole.
I suppose, if it matters.
And she goes on and says all of that, and then she leaves, and that's fine.
But that was also after she sort of toyed with the idea of making it sort of a...
Yeah, a three-way thing.
Yeah.
She didn't toy with that idea. She said it would have been nice if he had just said... didn't lie to me, because for her lying, I mean, at that point it was like he betrayed me in these ways that I can't get anything back from, and I'm leaving, even if that was a possibility at that point. Maybe it would have been better for them and better for anyone in particular
that
they just say fuck you and walk out when situations like that happen, but that's not...
It just seemed to me like they bought his bullshit, I guess, in both of them on some level, because he comes in and he essentially starts running this whole like counter reverse.
Like,
he acts like crazy Robert Downey Jr. and makes them all think maybe they're wrong.
There's two interesting scenes there, I think.
I saw this years ago, at least 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean it's old. One of the interesting scenes is that when he first gets caught in the lie, at the sort of the first half hour probably, the brunette character walks up, mm-hmm. and it becomes clear to him what's going on. That scene is brilliant because. Robert Downey Jr. is a really good actor, and what he does is extremely true to life, which is that he's an actor and a liar, and in this situation, he's caught in a situation that he cannot manipulate whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It is just the fact. Just everybody knows what the facts are.
Yeah.
And he stumbles there. He stops. He sort of has to, he starts stuttering. Mm-hmm. He sits down. He starts thinking about it, and then he gives the most sort of efficient, plausible explanation, and he says, I love both of you. At no point did I ever lie to either of you, blah, blah, blah. That's one scene. The other scene is when they start describing the fact that they were also cheating on him later okay. in the movie. Where he just, his mind gets blown and he sort of, and there's a moment where it becomes obvious to him that sort of, right, and he has distracts himself constantly by calling his mother. And this mm-hmm. is sort of the way that he...
And this also points to his whole, like, screwed-up psychology.
There's a whole screwed-up psychology there, but I think that that's sort of not the... That's an uninteresting part of the movie. The interesting part of the
old
movie...
Old hat Freudian stuff.
Right. Is how he sort of deals with... how he sort of deals with his own pride and his relationship to the pride of either of the women, and then why it is that him and Heather Graham, throughout the movie and at the end, stay together. Right? Why it is that they sort of relate. Even though they cheated and all this stuff, and, you know, ideally speaking, sort of in classical psychology, you want to say, well, people should just say fuck you and walk away and be, you know, strong.
Well, it sounds like maybe they deserve each other, right?
Maybe, but I think it's more than that, that's how everybody is, that's how all relationships are, and okay. that to some degree or another, the sort of dynamic that's going on there is going on with most people in most relationships.
Where both people when are lies being come out. Unfaithful on
well,
some
when
level.
People are lying in general, when mm-hmm. lies come out, that's the sort of thing that happens. Some people walk out, the smart people stay behind. So...
Wait, the smart people stay?
also in the film, right, Heather Graham character and the Robert Downey Jr. character are sort of intellectual. I mean, they're sort of... they're smart, and they always have to correct or sort of coddle the brunette into mm-hmm. into things or explain things to her.
She's simpler, but she's also simple.
She's cute, whatever.
She's streetwise.
Yeah, she's streetwise and whatever. But
she also was cheating though.
Or was she just like the Heather Graham girl, or she's vicarious or something.
Okay.
Like I think that she's an irrelevant character. She's sort of important for the plot.
She represents the more confused, and the Heather Graham represents the more cynical, weary. Yeah, I'm doing the same fucking around as you, so we both understand this.
Sort of, yeah.
Let's just do whatever this is, and who cares?
But also, her criticisms of the Robert Downey Jr. character were much more incisive. They were, and also, the brunette would constantly echo anything she said. Like, she would say something, and the brunette would then sort of chime in on the side. And,
okay.
I don't know why Dan thinks it's a terrible movie. I don't think it's a good movie. I think it's a good, just like Romance, it's just a good sort of...
Well, and the dialogue was sort of, eh, and...
The dialogue wasn't, eh.
And the structure, I just didn't like it as a, like, the script wasn't very good, I didn't think.
You didn't think it was a solid script.
But one of the things, they went out of their way in the film to show that Robert Downey Jr. had all these characteristics that would make him attractive. He, you know, liked opera, and he was talented at
opera?
Playing the piano. Yeah, he came in singing some
Gloria. He came in singing a Latin mass, like a Latin song. Latin,
yeah, some fancy, and he played the piano, and he was a talented actor. He did a long scene from Hamlet.
He was like all creative and stuff
right.
He was what women want, right?
But, what women want, but not in terms of relationship, right? Because he was an asshole.
He was a philanderer.
Yeah, he was a philanderer. But nevertheless, he had these qualities that would make him attractive. Sort of apart from that, that explained why they were originally attracted to him, but not that he would make a good relationship. And in the end, it was because he was hurt because his mama died.
Mm-hmm.
That made him Heather Graham sort of stick
that's
around.
That's not true.
Well,
oh yeah, that's right.
That's not true, though. That's not why she's
doing it. He got pity sex.
No.
Off his dead mom.
Nope, because she was the one who... No. And the reason
I hate that movie, too.
The reason that's plainly false is because Heather Graham was already sort of...
Well, she had
stayed
there.
Willing to say, I'm gonna give you a blowjob, whatever. Like, I'm gonna give you hell, but I will not leave. Like, I'm not going to be the one who leaves.
And that makes her smarter just because she's...
No, that's not a causal relationship.
But it makes the interesting characters the women in this film and not Robert Downey Jr. at all. Like, you get this sort of just outline, the silhouette of what he is as a character.
He's kind of like Hamlet. He pretends to be crazy for a little while so that way they might just, like, you know, forgive him outright.
But you're showing it to me for a reason.
I'm showing it to you because we're dating.
Yeah, right. And so you wanted to talk about
that's
these
some
sort
of kind of a reason, right?
Yeah, you wanted to talk about these relationship issues, which is fine to appeal to a movie like that. I wouldn't recommend this movie to anyone unless they had like cheating issues that they needed.
No, I would recommend this movie to anyone who's interested in sort of.
Does it teach anything about cheating issues? It sounds like it teaches that people cheat, and that's hunky dory. And if both of them do, then they can learn to get along.
It's not hunky dory. It's just the way it is. It's not good. It's not pleasant for anyone. It's just the way it is.
I would like seeing. I would have liked if that was like the end of the second act and that was the third act at the end of the Two Girls and a Guy. what happened afterwards.
Like a repercussions of the, yeah. The two that stayed together.
Yeah, but it just showed what the events in the course of that day. You know, it was the same.
And point. It almost made it seem like it had a sort of weird happy ending. Like, well, these people were not necessarily good people.
It wasn't a happy ending. It was a sort of a, you know, whatever. It was a No Country for Old Men ending. It was just... Nah. It was just what people do. It's just how people are. There are other movies that address issues about infidelity. Mm-hmm. Sex, Lies, and Videotape is a major...
Yeah, I've seen that.
A major one, right? And that actually is a... That also does a... I would say that does even a better job of... there's these two... The sisters that have very different personalities mm-hmm. and very different approaches to relationships. And that is a much more sort of rich and a better movie, and it's a richer sort of examination. But it's less succinct in its
yeah,
treatment
it's,
of the
there's other... There's a B story there, too, and yeah. There's all kinds of
there's other form. Stories there. And...
Anyway, so then the third movie we watched was Piano Teacher, which neither of us had seen before.
I had never seen it. I heard it got a really good. It won at Cannes like 2 or 3 years ago. And mm-hmm. Isabelle Huppert, the main actress in it, she's a brilliant. She was in I Heart Huckabees. She was the French mm-hmm. woman in that, and then she was in Eight Women, which is that French movie with the eight sort of best actresses in France in one movie.
But what was the pretense behind that one film?
Eight Women?
Was it just like they wanted to get these eight women together?
I think that's why they did it. But the movie
so that
itself,
started before they had a script? Is it a good movie?
It's a good movie. And the script itself is about all these women are sort of related to each other in various ways. There's a maid and there's all these other characters and they meet in the holidays and they get stuck in this house together. And there's all these issues that they have with each other.
Sounds like a Dogma 95 kind of thing.
No, it's very traditional sort of. But and the actresses are all classically like sort of mm-hmm. very good actors from ranging from very old to very young. I knew Per was one of the women in that movie, and so I heard very good things about Piano Teacher, and so I
she was excellent in the Piano Teacher. She was
yeah, and they say that was her best role. They say that so far this has been her best role except for this movie that just came out. Uh-huh. I forget what it's called, but this new movie that came out with her. They say that's supposed to be better than Piano Teacher. But anyway, the point is that I had heard good things, and then I saw it, and then I watched it. Dan was asleep. And then I told Dan to watch it the next day because
she couldn't watch it again because it was
I couldn't watch it again. Yeah.
Too much. So the plot of the Piano Teacher is she's a piano teacher. She's teaching
in Vienna.
In Vienna,
like at a conservatory or something.
Yeah,
like a well-known school.
One of the Viennese, like great. Sort okay. Of, yeah.
And she's very strict. She's teaching it in the Austrian style or whatever, mm-hmm. where she's very strict to all her students and sort of. Very demanding of her students and so on.
Well, that's sort of her job, right?
And the whole first act is just her in the conservatory. She's making her students cry and all this kind of stuff.
Because she's being mean to them? I don't understand.
Yeah, she's being mean. She's telling them that they have no talent.
She's critical. And
yeah.
But they've already reached a certain level, so it seems like all that crying stuff would be out of the way.
And a lot of it is her telling them that... they have no talent, and if you really want to make it, I mean, or you're just not going to make it. You just don't have
to. Just go to Vegas. You're a lounge act kind of thing.
Yeah. And one of the great things about the movie is that so she's a piano teacher, and the only music in the entire film is when someone's playing the piano. Actually,
it's all diegetic film.
All diegetic, and when there's music playing, it's all these classical pieces that are just beautiful.
Do you get the whole thing, or do you get like 2 seconds?
You get her performing at a what are those things called? Like a recital for professional, like in a. They used to have these things, so. They used to have this tradition in Vienna where they would have just these piano circles, I guess. It would be like a dinner party, and then two people would play or a person would play. And at the very beginning, she goes to one of these things, and she plays a...
Schubert.
And she's a fan of Schumann and Schubert, and there's a lot of Haydn, and there's some Chopin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that I think that's all that they play.
Cool.
You know, they play some Rachmaninoff, too.
Uh-oh.
A little bit of Rachmaninoff, yeah. His tryout for the thing is Rachmaninoff.
Yeah, yeah. It's all very sort of tense when there's no music playing.
But how is it shot? Is it all indoors with
it's like a normal movie. It's
But I mean, like in terms of color scheme or in terms of like environment,
it's on the darker side.
Is it overcast skies? Whenever it's outside, is it always raining? Do you feel like it's?
It almost looks like it could be a period piece, except it's sort of set in.
So it's real. It's not even really muted.
It's very beautifully shot.
Grays and browns.
Are these scenes where she's going to like. Porn shops and scenes where she's like going to drive-ins and stuff, and so it's all very sort of contemporary, and there's no, but the thing is, it's never you pay attention to the ambiance period because it's just her in every shot. Yeah. Like, it's just her in every shot.
Like, medium shot of her.
Yeah.
There's okay, so far, the mise-en-scene sounds kind of like it's not the issue.
It's really not. The thing is, that movie is very hard to talk about in those strips because you don't even pay attention sort of to what's...
Except that last scene.
So she meets the male character at this thing where she's performing. He's the son of one of the people, one of the socialites that have come to see the performance. Okay. And he is an engineering student, but he also plays piano, and he's one of the people who's going to perform. And he goes up there, and so he has a little interaction with her where he compliments her and talks about Schumann. And then he's supposed to go up and play like Chopin or something, and then he decides, but I've changed my mind, I'm going to play Schumann or Schubert.
Oh, man, I thought he'd do like, you know, Good Golly Miss Molly or something.
Mm-hmm. And so he plays
Great Balls of Fire.
And she watches him, and that's sort of it. And then you sort of don't know whether or not that's going to go anywhere. It's very, very strange because you sort of see her as a strict piano teacher and all this, and all of a sudden there's this first scene where she's going to this porn shop. And she's very matter of fact. She just walks in. She looks at people.
Everyone else sort of looks at her strangely because she's a small.
She's
little
like
woman.
A small woman with like a bun and like a trench coat, and she's just very like sort of proper. And she's waiting to go into one of the like.
The quarter booths where you can do the peep show thing.
Yeah, like the... Well, there are videos.
Yeah, you can go in there and watch porn.
But there's a line, and so there's these two men standing there, and she's standing there, and so she's just waiting and sort of browsing in the videos and sort of looking around. And then all of a sudden she goes in, and it's the scene of her, like... So another thing is that they cut out scenes from the American version of this movie.
Okay.
The American rented version that we got has a bunch of scenes cut out. And one of the scenes that is cut out is the scene in the porn shop. Because in the original movie, they show what she's looking at. Which mm-hmm. is just, like, hardcore, like, serious, like, many screens of sex. And then she does this thing that's completely insane. She's sitting there, and then, well, and moreover, when the guy before her walks out, she like, sort of looks at him, and then she goes in and closes the door and locks and sits down. He's looking at this, in the original French, looking at the porn, and then she takes a tissue from the garbage and sits there and smells it, just sitting there smelling it.
And it's just sort of just out sort of context, and it's very weird. And
that's the first thing you see, and it's just sort of, it's very bizarre, it's very matter of fact. There's no music, obviously, there's sort of like vague moaning in the background, but she's sort of sitting there smelling it, and then it cuts to her walking out mm-hmm. of the thing, and then she leaves, and that's it, and that's all you see.
The other stuff in the first act has to do with her interactions with her mother, and she like...
Is her mother dying or something like that?
The very first scene in the movie, the very, very first scene in the movie is her coming home late, and her mom's like waiting there.
She lives with her mother?
Yeah. Coming home late.
Is she supposed to be sort of like the almost an old maid kind of thing? Like setting that up, she still lives with her mother and she comes home, repressed and all this other stuff.
So she comes home and she like is late and her mom like goes into her purse and finds this like new shirt that she bought and they get into a physical fight. They mm-hmm. fight. And then
like,
she like
pulling hair and
she starts beating her mother and then at the end, like at the very end of the first scene, she like apologizes and they're fine. And then they go to sleep and they sleep in the same room on the same bed.
Okay.
And that's sort of the first thing you see about her. And then you see her teaching piano and all this other stuff.
And then the boy comes into audition, tries to get in good with her. And then he applies to the conservatory to...
Even though he's an engineering student.
Yeah. So he's changing...
Yeah, he's applying to a master class, which is, like, for people who already completely play piano mm-hmm. to get, like, sort of... To do a study with a professor, which is what he's trying to do.
And he wanted to work with her, and...
Do they ever establish why if she's on such a level of... Like, she's instructing this master class, so presumably she's, like, a supreme master
of the
piano.
Well, the problem is that her mother makes these offhand comments constantly, not constantly, but every once in a while she'll make these offhand comments about, well, you're just a teacher, you know, you're not a performer, you never got to be a performer.
And so there's some rationale behind that?
There's some tension perhaps about whether her mother or she sort of have complexes about the fact that she's a teacher and not a performer.
But it sounds like maybe it's possibly like she's good enough, but she's not confident enough in herself that she's good enough to do it as a performance. Or is she not good enough, or was there some
back? It seems like she just has, there's
this... Is this another case where they don't really do that? It's not about that.
I don't think it matters. Okay. To the movie. I mean, it matters to her relationship with her mother.
It seems like it matters too, because it sounds like there's a character arc going on here when you have her from the beginning being strict teacher, and this is presumably the first time she's gone in and watched the... This is a regular event for her.
This is obvious.
This is just Tuesday night for her then.
The other scene is at the drive-in where she goes to the drive-in, and what she does is she walks around the cars looking for people making out in the cars. She'll sit there like...
Does she have like a box of popcorn just so it looks like... this isn't my car.
But she'll go up to one of the cars and sort of sit down behind it and sort of wash them.
No, that's not exactly what she does. She looks for couples that are having sex, and then she finds them, and then she squats and takes off her underwear and masturbates while she's sitting there watching them.
Did they cut any of that out?
They cut that out, too, I think. Okay. Yeah. It looked like they cut it out, and I think they did. So there's a scene, and then the guy catches her doing that, and he, like, runs out and screams, like, you're a cunt or whatever, and she's, like, running away. But she's running away, and she seems, like, afraid that she's running away, but by the time she's home, she's, like, completely composed, and it's, like, whatever, that shit happens, so.
Mm-hmm. That shit happens, too, right?
Yeah.
So the student applies to the conservatory. All the other people who are on the admissions board seem to like him, seem to think that he'd be a good student.
Well, he's also, politically it makes sense because he's the son of this...
But that's just some guy. And the guy who he's the son of isn't even particularly rich or anything. I think they just like sort of are there because they're all connoisseurs or something.
But I mean, it sounds like politically it makes sense for them to like him.
Yeah, I don't think that
comes think that's okay. Comes up at all. Yeah.
I'm sorry to give it such a sexist reading.
But everyone else seems impressed with him, but she is very hesitant, but finally agrees to let him in. Her student has a performance, and she's playing, and she does these fucked up...
No, I'm also wrong. He has the first class with her, and doesn't say anything, and sort of is just whatever, and then it's over, and he, like, tells her to be nice to him, and she's just like, whatever, and then she follows him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but nothing happens between them yet. He leaves, and he gets his hockey stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she follows him and watches him play hockey. Cut scene, and then it goes to the performance of her student.
So he plays hockey like recreationally with friends or something like that. In the roof of the Quick Stop.
Yeah, something like that. And then she does this fucked up shit with her student.
She does really fucked up shit with her student.
She has these sort of punk, like, she's entirely composed, and this is why she's such a great
actor. It sounds
actor.
Like so far the way this is structured is it's like a scene to show this character. In her world of control, which is this classroom.
Yeah.
And then, boom, now it's cut to a scene where she's in a sort of, like, something sexual and shows where she's kind of maybe not losing control of whatever sort of desire or situation is going on with her.
I don't think she's losing
control.
Sounds
like it's one then the other.
She's losing control with her mother often, but not, that's the only time she really does. So the thing is, okay, so this next scene, it's unclear what you want to mean when you say she loses control, because... Her student, her, like, female student who's sort of, who she, like, really sort of is hard on most of the time, has a recital. And the student shows up late, and it's supposed to be with a singer that she's performing.
Oh,
and she's late,
because,
and she's crying.
Because she didn't trust her to perform on her own, so she's like, no, you're going to have a singer with
you
to...
She's crying, and she's, like, vomiting, and she's, like, unable to perform. And the teacher just tells her to, like, shape up and do it. And they go on stage. And the teacher's just, like, standing there with arms crossed. Just being completely sort of...
The singer did not show up?
No. Her student, the piano player, shows up late and is very nervous and throwing up and crying.
But the singer is...
The singer
is
irrelevant. The singer is just like the semester. Okay. And they go on stage and then the male character is there because he's a student at the conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
And he comforts her student and sort of... helps her get to the piano.
He's
and,
like... It's his colleague. He wants to see her succeed.
From
that makes
the
sense.
Side... The teacher is standing and looking at him, comforting her, and she just turns around and walks out and goes to the cover acts.
While the performance is happening.
In the middle of the,
middle of the performance. Goes to the coat racks and takes a glass and
No, wanders around for a bit, sort of brooding.
Yeah, but she's also looking
for
the
coat racks.
Yeah, she's
looking for the coat racks, yeah.
Finds her coat and takes a glass and puts it in a napkin and crushes the glass and then dumps the glass in her female student's pocket. And then afterwards...
Coat pockets?
Yeah, her coat pocket. And then afterwards, you know, the female student puts her coat on, sticks her hand in her pocket,
and
cuts her hand.
Cuts
really
her
bad.
Completely.
And that's gruesome and terrible. And
yeah.
Is it like, gruesome? Is it like viscerally? Like David Cronenberg style gruesome? Like you get to see like...
It's
connect.
Pulsating.
Yeah.
Like, little mouth comes out
little
of
vagina,
it.
Little vagina hands and stuff.
No. You don't really see too much graphically there, but just the fact that she would do something like this is fucked up. And,
yeah.
And the whole movie is punctuated by these little... of her composed and her like when she was crushing
even
glass,
what's happening she's composed she just
she's
looks at it she turns
composed.
Around and goes to the bathroom
and she had this very stoic face on where you almost can't read any emotion to it but just a little bit and the actress does a really good job with this and then after that she goes upstairs to the bathroom and then her male student runs to find her in the bathroom.
As is after the cut hands.
Well, everyone else is sort of busy trying to find, trying to help the female student with her hand and so on. And the male student runs.
That pretty
away.
Much ruins the piano career.
Yeah,
this,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like her hands are effectively damaged enough that
to the point
know,
that
connective, you know,
tendons
and stuff might
yeah.
have cut. Yeah, okay.
But the male student goes up there and finds the piano teacher in the bathroom, sort of hiding in one of the bathroom stalls.
And he probably knows what she's done. He probably figures
well,
she's done this.
It's not entirely clear, but he sees her walking away when it's happening, and he notices that. And so in the bathroom, they sort of make out and have this bizarre interaction where she
wants to jerk him off.
But sort of like violently,
to the point that it hurts him.
And he's like, "Stop it! Don't do it like that." And she's like, "Well, if you don't do exactly this, then I will like turn around and walk."
Just like with the piano.
Yeah. So she has a set list of what he has to do.
So what's the deal? Why does he give a shit about her?
He's just in love with her. That's just sort of the thing. And he's been pursuing her ever since he met her. And that's sort of just his role. He doesn't care
about the fact that he cut up somebody's hand.
The thing is, he comes in and he like tells her he loves her, and it becomes clear, I think, to him is that the fact that she's jealous in the situation, and it seems like he's picking up on this jealousy. Yeah. And he's going in there, and the reason that it happens then is because he's picked up on the jealousy. I don't know if he realizes that she did all that, but it seems as if he wouldn't care.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cold.
And so then they do that. They have this bizarre sort of hand job situation going on, and then
does it involve like ropes and doors being slammed?
No, she's just standing there, and she like doesn't let him turn around or put his pants back on or anything. She just
and he keeps on wanting to fuck her, and she's like, no, you gotta
not
do it
right
like
now.
This.
You gotta do like exactly like this, and she just does this thing, and then leaves. But then she agrees to meet with him again.
Mm-hmm.
And this next meeting,
like at a hotel room kind of thing, like typical CD type of situation now?
Well, no, but then there's some scene in which he follows her home, and this is when the real sort of stuff starts happening. Like
then the mom gets involved?
Well,
sort of, yeah.
So she takes him up to her room.
Her mom's room.
Well, her mom's like sort of this really overbearing sort of witch, and so her mom's like, "This is really bad. Like, how can you be doing this?" So they get into the room and they block the room off with like an armoire.
They move like a closet in front of the door,
like as if zombies were coming.
Yeah, as if zombies were coming.
And then
you
they sit down.
Ready.
And she
nice.
Gives him
the shovel.
Well, so the thing is, she's given him this. She's agreed basically that she likes him now, and so he's in a situation where he really likes her. And he's really excited to be with her. And they're in class, and she gives him a letter during their class. And then after this letter situation, he follows her home. And so, without her asking him to,
we haven't established yet for the listeners. This is, people might be thinking this is one of those, like, older teacher, underage student, but this is not the case, right?
No, it's like a 20-something student.
Okay, so that's also not a factor in this.
It's sort of a factor, but he's not so young that it's...
It's not a legal thing. There's
no cops kicking down a door at any point,
which probably wouldn't happen in France, but... You know.
I mean, he's like 22, and she's probably like 38 or something like that. So it's like, well, it's sort of older, but it's not like that.
45, something like that.
But she writes him this long letter that he doesn't open, because he keeps trying to just like... make out with her and sort of have fun with her and sort of go somewhere with her. And she's just sort of like, no, you have to read this letter.
Because she's telling him how to do everything.
And in the room, he opens this letter and reads it.
When they're barricaded off. So he's with her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the letter describes all the different ways that, all the different sexual acts that she wants him to do to her.
Is it enumerated? Or
no,
is it like outline form?
No, but it's written in essay format but it's...
Underlined, italicized.
But it's not all of them aren't even sexual per se. They're just sort of
bullet
general
list.
Dominating.
Right, so she wants him to do things like hit her in front of her mom, and tie her up and just sort of hit her generally.
Okay, so
about the face.
It's all sadomasochistic type
yeah.
garbage then.
And he's sort of freaked out by it, and so he's freaked out. She's looking at him, and then she goes under her bed and moves around some magazines and things, and then pulls out a box and says, "I have it all here."
Right, and she pulls
and
out
she
all her instruments, like her whips and her...
Like her chains
and
all sorts of...
And stuff. And
her gimp mask.
Her gimp mask.
With
gimp
the zipper and everything.
And she's very proud of the gimp mask.
Any ball gags?
I don't remember.
There's a ball gag in there, I think.
Okay.
And there's like all these chain ties and all this. And she's just sitting there sort of sprawled next to it. And looking up at him and saying, "And now you can tell me what to dress, what to wear, and how to be. You can do now. From now on, I know I'm going to tell you what to do." So this is like this moment where she's like, "I'm giving up all my sort of."
She's laying her cards in the table.
Yeah, and he's like not having it. This is like something he's not having.
She freaks, and this is the only scene where it seems like her confidence sort of
falters
just a little bit. And
well, she's apparently
kind of vulnerable.
Yeah. That's exactly what she's doing, right? She's a control freak that's saying, "I don't want any more control." So she's completely... But she's sort of polarized like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all control, now none, and then stops and realizes, oh, crap, now
mm-hmm.
I have no control. That's pretty scary.
Anyway, we shouldn't give away the whole movie. I don't know how much you want to...
I don't know. I mean, you can't talk about the movie without talking about the final scene.
You know what? Then go with the spoilers. Go for it. I don't care. People know there'll be spoilers in this crazy sex movie. It probably sounds like it's the sort of thing
the
where
thing about it is
even
that
if you know how it's, what it's going
to
happen when you go
you watch
it,
watch
you
it
have, it's a visceral
her
sort of
acting
thing.
Is
yeah.
sort of just you cannot describe how she acts.
Okay.
I can tell you what happens, and that's going to say nothing about sort of how, I mean, uncomfortable it is
yeah.
how she acts. Yeah.
And her mom. There's a lot of weird things going on with her mom, and I think her mom has an idea of what she does with the men that she brings home.
She doesn't bring home men ever, though. That's the thing. This seems like it's the first time this is ever happened.
But her mom says things like, oh, how can you bring men in the house to do whatever, you
yeah.
know, the things you're going to do. So I think her mom has at least an idea, and there's also scenes of her mom sort of going through her clothes and stuff, so it's likely that her mom has found
yeah.
her little box of
right.
Of stuff, so... So he leaves in a huff, saying, "No, you're crazy. You're a pervert. I don't want to have anything to do with this." Leaves, and then later she follows him to his hockey game, and sort of he's out there playing hockey, and then he goes into the locker room, and she pulls him aside and says, "Hey, you got to come talk to me." And they go into an empty locker room, and she tries to have sex with him, and then ends up vomiting.
Yeah, but they cut out that scene where she's.
He forces
her to.
Yeah.
That's the scene that's cut out. The scene that's cut out is that he says, "You need to help me out," so he forces her to give him a blowjob, and then she throws up.
Because he'd just been playing hockey all day,
yeah.
so he's all sweaty. And
he had hockey nut.
But also, no, but that's not the point. But that's not, it's not that, that it's that she's not really sexually experienced at all, it doesn't seem like.
And she was trying to.
She hasn't built up a proper tolerance to hockey
now. Yeah, that's right. But she was also trying to have normal sex for him in order to make him feel better about her
yeah.
and sort of not hate her like that. And she couldn't do that. And so she ends up running like half naked through the ice or whatever.
Zamboni guys like just like whatever. This happens all the time.
And then
she comes to her house that night.
Well, before that, there's a scene with her and her mom in bed.
That's after that. That's after he beats her up.
Yeah, that's right. So then he comes to the house at night and decides to forcibly act out all the things that she had written out on the essay. Right?
Okay.
So he starts hitting her.
Well,
in
he
front
like
of
takes
mom,
her mom
and
then throws her mom
in
the room.
Wait a minute. You said forcibly, as if like now he's. Adding another dimension to what she initially wanted. She wanted this to happen, right? She
yeah,
wanted this
she
wanted forcible stuff.
He kept on asking her, is this what you want? She would say no. But he would do it anyway.
I do not understand.
Is this
a case of her, like, wanting to not want something? Like, is this just a sort of perpetually frustrating situation like that where, and then he's finally saying, you know what, screw this, I did it all the same.
So this is part of the crux of the movie, I think, is because she's very controlling, but once she gets the situations that she wants, it's not an issue about wanting it anymore. It's just
getting someone, the idea that someone will do it. You break their will to get them to behave the way you want them to, and then once they're doing that, even if you might not actually want the repercussions of that behavior.
Yeah, I really don't get it.
It's almost like it'd be entertaining to see if I could convince you to hate me, but I wouldn't like the idea of
you
actually hating me.
Yeah,
you have to
yeah.
What happens in the scene though? Because it's relevant. What happens after that?
Right. So he hits her and he
he's got the mom.
He doesn't hurt the mom, but he grabs her and throws her into the room and locks the door and you know keeps on saying this is what you want, right? And then
he quotes her. He says things like and keep my mom locked out.
And he hits her really hard to the point that her nose is
he
bleeding.
Breaks her nose like
yeah it looks like he that's what he
yeah.
does.
It's all canted and there's like snot and blood and shit coming out of her.
No, there's just blood. She's just bloody. He's like beating her about the face.
And then he rapes her. Although it's again sort of not clear if it counts as rape or sort of how that works. Lolly has strong opinions about this. I don't know why you're letting me describe this scene because I'm not doing it justice.
That's a strong opinion.
But he's on top of her and he's I don't remember exactly what he says to her and what she says back.
Is it traditional rape position or
no? It's well, what's traditional? Rape?
It's just a joke, really.
It's not that he says anything to her. She mumbles stop a couple times. She wants him to stop doing it. And he looks at her and says no.
So they just don't have their problems. Sounds like their problems. They just don't have a safety word.
Yeah.
Well, but the point is that it wouldn't have stopped. I mean, the thing is, it wouldn't stop because he was.
She's not like Gene Roddenberry. Gene Roddenberry. It's like, whoa. Because that would never normally come up in any situation like that, right? So it has to be something really far flung.
But this scene is important.
Well, the scene, okay, the part of what you're missing here is that it's more than that he's acting out what she wants. At this point, he's not going to be with her.
Although
he's not in love with her. No. He's not in love with her. He already thinks that
she's sick of her shit, but he thinks he's teaching her a lesson.
He's sick of her shit. And it's not that he's teaching her a lesson either. It's that he's angry.
That.
And he's angry, and he's angry, and he sort of gives her a taste of her own medicine in the sense that he's like, you know, you want to be a freak? Then let's
isn't this what you wanted?
And the thing is that it is what she wanted, because she wrote out a fucking essay. Several pages that, you know, described exactly what he was doing.
So then he leaves after that. Because it cuts to a scene of her going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's laying in bed with her mom, and
there's a scene when they go to dinner, where she walks to the dinner table when she's pleading.
No, that's cut out. That's earlier. That's earlier, and that's cut out of the American version also. Because it's a scene of her sitting in her bathtub, using a razor to cut her vagina until it bleeds. And she comes out to the kitchen, and she's like, blood runs down her leg, and her mom thinks it's because she's on her period, and she's like, what's wrong with you? But the sort of, and her parents' face in this scene is just like, oh yeah, that's sorry, you know, like, no, nothing, no sort of,
yeah.
Any case, so she's laying in bed with her mom, and there's a moment of silence there, right? But then this inexplicable shit happens. Where she turns over and starts fucking fondling her mom and making out with her and telling her she loves her and that she's the only person she's ever loved.
But her mom's struggling, and so it's more of a fight, but they're in bed.
It's a fight, but she's like, and then she turns over and her mom's like, get off, what's wrong with you? And then she's laying there, and then she turns back over and like pulls her mom's nightgown up and sort of like looking at her like vagina and like fondling her. And her mom's like, well, Jesus Christ, stop. And then she turns over and she's like, I saw you. What does she say?
I saw your hairs.
Yes. It's bizarre. And then her mom's like, well, you have a recital tomorrow. You have a big thing tomorrow, and so you have to...
It's a school night.
And she's playing. She's the next thing she's playing for the student.
It's a school night, honey.
She's playing for the student whose hands she messed up.
She's
taking her place in this performance.
Oh, that's nice of her.
And it's at the conservatory, so everyone's going to be there, and...
Including the guy.
And, right before this is the scene where she's in the kitchen, and she pulls out a big, like,
It's not a steak, it's a chopping knife.
Vegetable knife or something.
Oh, okay.
And she puts it in her purse.
And then she goes to
It's purse size, then.
It's purse size, yeah. It's
Or, handy. Like, did she just happen to have her big purse with her?
No, it was like a little purse.
Okay.
And she goes to the recital, and she waits out in the lobby for the guy to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No. Guy comes in, and the guy comes in with a big crowd of people, mm-hmm. all his friends from the conservatory.
All his homies.
And he says something like, good luck, professor.
Yeah, sort of callously, not even really looking at her, just sort of walking by and sort of offhand says, oh, good luck, and just walks by.
Mm-hmm.
She sits there and stares, and the cinematography, I'll show you the video in just a
second. You can tell she has makeup on around her eyes for her black eyes. She's sort of bruised up in the face, but she's standing there.
And the scene is just...
It's a Viennese concert hall. It's like a big chandelier at the top, white marble everywhere. She's standing right in the middle in front of a staircase. And then it's seen from behind her, and then it turns around and it's in front of her. And she's standing there looking with her purse.
And she pulls the knife out of it, right? She's just looking up the stairs, and she has this completely stoic face on. And then she just makes the most... She pulls the knife out of her purse, and she makes this most grotesque face. It still haunts me. And she just stabs herself right in the shoulder. Like, not at any vital organ, but just...
No,
just,
that's...
Just for,
that,
the, just for the pain of...
I think in a podcast a while ago, Zach and I talked about where you could get shot.
Yeah.
In the Master Set series, when we were talking about Last Action Hero, you know, where this is just a fucking gunshot, you know, it's a flesh wound. And that is a good spot, the shoulder.
But the thing is, she's wearing a white blouse and, like, a skirt, like a beige skirt.
So it looks tie-dyed or something after that.
Well, but she takes the knife, she pulls the knife out.
Mm-hmm.
She's standing there, and then a little dot shows up of blood, and then it gets bigger, and then she puts her hand over it,
and
turns around, and just walks out of the concert hall. Just out. Turns around and walks out, and it cuts to the credits.
And
that's it. That's the movie.
Wow, that's really pretentious.
Well,
it doesn't seem pretentious because it's too real. First of all, it's too realistic. All of it, none of it is stylized. It's very like,
especially because there's no music in the rest of it, and so it's very
that does add a realism. Weird. Yeah.
I don't know. It was very powerful, and she does such a good job in the movie that it just makes you want to talk about it.
One of the things is that the last third of the movie or so, she wears her hair down until the very last scene. She starts wearing her hair only down.
So there's arc there in terms of her character.
At first it's only up. And she's very sort of terse. Mm-hmm. And then after the first, after the bathroom scene, she starts wearing her hair slowly down.
Okay, so which shoulder is she stabbing? Her left?
Her left shoulder.
Her left shoulder. Okay. And she makes a face. Make the face.
She goes like.
You didn't do it well. But...
Basically, she knows it's going to hurt like a son of a bitch, but yeah. She's going to do
and
it
she
anyway.
She hurt herself, right? And so the idea is that.
What would she do with the knife? Does she drop it Godfather style? She walks out?
Yeah, she puts it back in her purse and she takes it with her. But okay. she'd been preparing to do this, right? She prepared for it sort of immediately before that, but she also
But you don't know that's what she's preparing for. It looks like she's preparing to stab someone else. Like it doesn't.
So all the people aren't going to get to see a concert, right? Because she
yeah,
this is before the concert.
This
isn't
before
after.
The concert, okay. And she just walks out. So anyway, so go
on. Well, one of the things I want to talk about is just this idea of. And it comes out really well in Piano Teacher of this is what she wants and she's not being sort of what's the word
lackadaisical
blasé
yeah she's not being blasé about it she's thought it out very well and she's not the kind of person to be blasé about anything
no she has she's very controlling which means that she does think plan things
Look,
out she does want
is,
things
okay,
to happen a certain
all,
way
but when those things that she planned out happened. It's not,
not
what she wants.
Not, I want to stop you there.
Yeah.
This is the wrong reading of the movie. This is also the wrong reading of women in general.
Which is why
the
I
reason
to talk
why
about.
It's the wrong reading is that the only thing she doesn't want is to be abandoned by this guy after having shown her sort of true colors.
Mm-hmm.
That scene, there's a dynamic there that's going on. There's two things going on. One is that it seems as if she doesn't want the actual sort of beating and the whatever else.
Sure.
But the other thing that she doesn't want is what it means that he's doing that at all, which is that he's not going to be paying attention to her after this, which is why she knows to plan out to bring the knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
She understands that what this means for their relationship is that he's ridiculing her, humiliating her
yeah.
in her own sort of framework, but nevertheless doing that, and then walking out and not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer going to be around to indulge this relationship in this way. The thing is, they never really had a real relationship, right? They just had
no.
sort of this. They revealed their attraction to one another, and then what? But so the thing is, I contend that I don't think that it's true that she doesn't want what's going on there in the particular sort of in that particular situation. The stuff where she says no and sort of wants him to stop, all of that is sort of part of her fantasy there.
Okay.
But the reason she's actually upset in that scene, and the reason she's actually acting that way with her mother afterwards. Is not because she got beat up, and not because she got abused, and not because the guy shoved her mother in the room or anything
mm-hmm.
like that. It's not about any of the actual abuse or rape or anything that goes on in the scene. It's that what it means that he's doing that is that he's leaving her. And so what happens right
she's
after...
She's just so crazy.
Well, what happens right after he does that? He leaves,
mm-hmm.
she comes back, and she does crazy sort of incestuous things with her mother, who's always there, right? He's
mm-hmm.
always there. She's always there, and she's always like, you know,
And she's not going to leave.
She's not going to leave,
yeah.
no matter what. And, you know, they can do anything with each other and whatever. And so her reaction to being abused like that is not, mother, help me tend to my wounds or anything like that. It's that I'm going to be attached to you in the way that I wanted him to stay around and keep beating me like that and keep doing those things. The next morning, she, in a completely composed fashion, gets the knife, goes and stabs herself after having witnessed exactly what she feared was the case,
mm-hmm.
which is that he is no longer interested in any way. And so
yeah.
all of that abuse on his from his perspective is not fulfilling her fantasy in any way,
it's...
but rather just taking out on her his anger,
yeah.
which is a completely different thing than what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to be dominated by someone who wants to dominate her.
Okay.
I mean, that's not
and
what
he
he's
didn't.
Doing.
Yeah, he didn't want to.
That's
do
not.
It, yeah.
That's not what he's
because he wanted just a normal
right.
Relationship.
That's right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so the way that what he's doing there is not within the bounds of her letter.
Yeah.
At all. And so that's why she goes to her mother, and that's sort of that's what's going on in that scene. And I don't think that it's an interesting question to ask. What's going on with what she wants? Because I think it's pretty clear what she wants. She wants that, you know, in a way that's permanent or something like that, or in a way that's accepted.
Reliable, maybe.
Or reliable or something like that. Or
she wants it till she doesn't want it from him, then she can kick him to the curb. It's a basic relationship thing.
Well,
you don't want to be the one that gets dumped.
So
you want to be the one that does the dumping.
Well, so Daniel has... Daniel is confused about this, or Daniel has talked about this movie as if he's confused about it in ways that... in a way to try to capture what's interesting about the movie. And what's interesting about the movie, I don't think, is a question about whether she wants certain things or she doesn't. But rather just her perversion, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of just an examination of her perversion. I don't think there's anything questionable about it in the sense that it's you can't point out what it is that she wants, but rather these things
why
that she wants are
is
really strange. And perhaps why But sort of why do they manifest the way they do? Mm-hmm. And what does it sort of mean? Like, what's going to happen to her after? Like, what does it mean for her? Like, is every relationship for her going to happen this way? Is she going to have any more relationships after that? Is this something that actually, is this some sort of examination of something that's generally true about people, but in a sort of extreme way, or isn't it? But all this stuff about sort of what does she want and whether or not, like, sort of having fantasies that involve being dominated are malleable like that, or if people know what they want, I think it's sort of not. I think it's sort of clear for the way she acts with her mother.
So you don't think the mechanics of her perversion?
I think she knows what she wants. I don't even think that she's that bothered by what happened. I think the way that she's acting about it shows that.
Mm-hmm.
She's not bothered by what happened. She just takes it, and he leaves, and she's not sitting. You don't see her sitting there feeling sorry for herself. You don't see her crying afterwards. There's no scenes of her weeping, sort of lamenting what happened. The only scene afterwards that has any content is the scene with the mother. So she's telling him to stop, and she means it. But she doesn't mean it like, don't beat me or don't do this, but rather, don't do what you're going to do, which is do this, and then, in a way that's humiliating, and leave, and sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Right, because for her, that rape scene is just sort of not fulfilling her fantasy, not dominating her because he wants to own her, but just because he wants to use her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different from what she's describing when she talks about it. Right, and she has these forward-looking fantasies. Now you will tell me what to wear in this sort of indefinite, in the indefinite future.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And is that the same thing that's going on in romance? Where she wants some sort of...
Yeah.
But in romance, she doesn't want a commitment.
From her boyfriend?
Well, she wants it from her boyfriend, but not from any of the other guys that she's...
So when she gets... So there's something different about it, but it's not entirely different. It's just that the filter in the romance character's life is sexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's her commitment filter. To her, it seems, if a man's not having sex with me,
mm-hmm.
then he's not really my man. Or he's nothing to me that's romantic or filial or anything like that.
So do you think these are two sides of the same coin, then? This sort of grotesquely sexual stuff in romance and the sort of more general...
I wouldn't say two sides of the same coin, I mean, but it's the same issue. It's different. It's not two sides of the same coin in the sense that I don't think the coin is commitment and then on one side there's perversion, on the other side there's...
Mm-hmm.
Because on both sides, I mean, in both cases there's perversion.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and moreover, there's dominating scenes in romance
mm-hmm.
that function very similarly. She's never done it, but then she does it and she doesn't like it, but then she goes back and sort of she talks about it like these times I had with him were some of the greatest times I ever had. Mm-hmm. Who comes to pick her up after she kills her husband?
Mm-hmm.
It's the fucking old dude. It's the
spoiler alert. She kills her husband.
Yeah.
That's in the one with the model. I thought that was her boyfriend. They get married at some point.
Well, no, she just gets pregnant, and then before she has a baby, she kills him.
She gets pregnant by him.
Yeah.
He starts having sex with her again.
He had sex with her once.
Her pregnant.
And then he, like, as soon as he, like, sort of ejaculates, he shoves her off of him and throws her on the ground. And then she says, that's how the bastard got me pregnant.
Wow. At least you'll remember it, though. Rough. I'm a little curious, in films like this, do you think, it seems like you can analyze it in the context of the world of the narrative, but I'm curious in terms of what the filmmakers are trying to say with the story about like characters like this, which is why I'm trying to find things about their motivations and things about their, it seems like there is a bit of an arc in the piano teacher one. You know, at least visually, there's something changes in terms of her hair talked about.
And makeup.
So do you think... You did polish it off. What do you know?
I polished it off. That spill was not a spill at all.
Do you think that that they're saying something about people that are sort of alienated? It seems like in all these cases, there's less of a sense that these people are living full three-dimensional lives that have interactions with colleagues at work or... you know, just pleasant.
Well, not going to like that because she wants to say that these things are true to life, or sort of.
Well, I mean, they might just be focused on one aspect of of life.
I think that one of the ways that it's true to life is that you know most people, for example, you know they don't read or they don't really do anything, And in the romance, it's particularly true because you have a Philistine sort of character.
Yeah.
A character who's sort of, you know, supposed to be a teacher and stuff, but her life is sort of otherwise.
What do they show her doing on her, in her free time other than having sex?
Nothing. She doesn't do anything. But the thing is, she doesn't do anything in her spare time. Her spare time is spent throughout the movie just sort of contemplating herself and her self-pity, hanging out with her boyfriend, sort of talking about the relationship, or searching for other men to have sex with, or sort of falling into situations where she's doing that. And in Piano Teacher, there are scenes where she's, like, you know, looking at music or doing whatever it is she's doing. But the thing is that that's sort of... The reason that there's not really an interesting commentary to be made about alienation or anything like that, or at least it doesn't seem to me that there's an interesting commentary to be made about that, is that it's sort of... You're looking at the microcosm of someone's sort of ego throughout the movie. And so it's not important.
Well, it's like they're kind of solipsistic people, though.
Well, but it's just that everyone has this limit, you know, this cognitive.
Yeah, but this sounds like it's sort of an extreme in the case.
No.
It's all about me being pitiful and not doing anything with my life and not helping other people.
But any movie of this sort will make a character appear that way simply because everyone's life is like that.
Sure. Let's differentiate that then from something like maybe more traditional, like American romantic comedy, where usually just for this one thing, I'm curious. Usually, in that case, so say the character is having trouble with a relationship, and they show that the character interacting with other people in a way that shows that they have somewhat more dimensionality, like playing basketball with one of their idiot friends. That kind of shit's in every one of those stupid romantic comedies, and helping somebody, you know, helping his bros move, you know, and they're having a beer in the middle of that, and they're talking about it. It sounds like in these films, play a hockey on the roof. These characters are so trapped in their own world that they don't have those kinds of simple, which I think is not true to life. I think, I mean,
no, but she interacts with two.
Two. That's two.
But that's false because the Piano Teacher interacts with their students every day, like young students, older students, mm-hmm. or colleagues. But the point is that she can't talk to anyone about anything because her entire perversion is not something that you can talk about, right?
Yeah.
Unless you find this one person who you want to stick around.
Sorry,
and that person doesn't, and so whatever. So the reason I don't think that this is sort of a track that's not important is that...
I just think that maybe in both those films, it sounds like what the filmmakers are maybe sort of doing is a critique on people that are that self-involved. Like,
it's not a critique, though, in either case.
Well, it sounds like they're both tragic kind of stories, right? I mean, they're not happy endings, it doesn't sound like. But this happily ever after is, but is it being ironic?
Well, in the romance, it sort of is. I mean, it sort of is like she's got her catharsis, she's got her kid...
She's a single mother now, thinking
probably
that this child.
It looks like she's going to be with
this older guy.
Yeah, but in Piano, I don't know. It just seems to me that it's such a rich sort of an obvious examination of this sexual psychology that there's no. There's no role there to talk about things like alienation or sort of. Whether or not it's a criticism of them, but rather it's just sort of look at these people in the way they are.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can say. What do you mean by criticism? It's like, how do you criticize someone's?
Well, I don't mean. I think I mean it more as an examination. I think, you know.
Yeah,
it's a critique. I guess is what I'm saying.
It's definitely a study.
But it sounds like. But the thing is, every critique in a film, even a documentary, is colored by the filmmakers themselves editorially. Making choices about what to show, what not to show. Even if, let's say this was, as you're saying, there are real people like this, obviously. Say this was a documentary about a person that really was like this way, was this sort of self-involved, hypersexual behavior person. The filmmaker would be documenting this.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you call her self-involved? Why is it?
Because
it
sounds like in both of these cases, the character is... doesn't have any friends, it doesn't seem like there's any demonstration beyond that. And then especially you just described in romance that she doesn't do anything. She doesn't read books, she doesn't watch TV, she just sort of thinks about herself and feels pity for herself. That seems self-involved to me. If it's nothing else but the self, that seems self-involved. And maybe that's an editorial choice.
I just don't think that's right at all, because I don't... I mean, that's like saying, I'm looking at Ian live his life and do this podcast and do dinner and everything. Everything he's doing involves him doing something.
Yeah, it involves me doing something, but if it
and
involves...
And yourself involved.
Like, if it involves me, like, helping my friend move, then that shows that I'm doing other things.
The lack of scenes that show good Samaritanism or generosity or altruism...
Or interaction with other people on a level that's not about that person. You know, it's about... Just, it shows that they're reliable to help somebody.
I don't think that there's any plausible commentary in either of these films about whether or not these people are self-involved.
So you believe that it's possible that these people have, like, friends.
The phrase
you just don't see.
The phrase self-involved is a judgment call.
Yeah.
About that person's character.
Yeah, it is.
I think that there's no space to make that. You can sort of argue that, but there's nothing. But the nature of what they're talking about in the movies makes it such that that's sort of just
an
assumption.
But
I mean,
that's
not,
the character.
Not that they're self-involved in a negative way, but rather that this is about their psychology, and so therefore, I mean, anything that you're going to show is going to be about their psychology.
But they chose not to show anything else to add a level of.
Because it's not an American romantic comedy. I mean, it's not.
Well, I know, but even so.
They probably don't play basketball in front.
You have, but no, but you have no. You're not giving any other dimensionality. It's like they chose not to give them more dimensionality on purpose.
I don't think that that's dimensionality. I think, as a matter of fact, they're very rich and complex characters. Without,
I mean, there's plenty of movies.
But you know, it's entirely possible that you know, in your plot summaries, and if I have not seen it, there are just little things that do show what I'm talking about. That just I'm missing.
Let me ask you a question then.
Things that show them.
An American movie that's a character, the character study like that. There are fewer of them, obviously, in the American canon. But
American Splendor is a character study.
I don't know that movie.
American Splendor is a character study. As a matter of fact, American Splendor is a good example.
Okay.
He's not self-involved in.
No, he's not. He has his friend. He has Crumb as his friend. He has.
But look,
he has a wife.
American Splendor is an examination of someone who is extremely self-pitying, who sort of has all these characteristics. It's a single. But the thing is, to say that it's a movie about someone who's self-involved, or even to call himself involved based on a movie, is to sort of just say something that's just obviously true about that type of movie, which is that it's about...
So it's a trivial statement, is what you're saying.
That
makes sense, because American Splendor is a biopic, essentially, about this one guy. And so in these other cases, they're fictional biopics. But not really. They're more psychological studies.
But they're psychological studies, and what I'm saying is that in this type of movie, to say something to conclude from the movie as one of your conclusions from the movie, this person is self-involved as a judgment like that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this person is self-involved.
This
character is self-involved as opposed to not being self-involved, as opposed to being altruistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of not. You can't make that. You just need no basis to make that.
I mean, I think you kind of all you have with the movie is what's in the movie. I mean, that's why you say character, because it's the character that's given and the actions that they do based on what you can see in the movie. Now, if I can infer that there is other things going on through little bits that are in the movie, the story doesn't have to be about that.
You remember
Ghost
World?
Ghost World. I've seen it, yeah.
So in Ghost World, you have this female character. Female.
There was Thor Birch and. What's her
name?
But
she's the main one.
Yeah, Thor Birch is the main one. Yeah, her friend goes and gets a real life.
And then she judges her friend.
Yeah, exactly.
So that movie is another example of that. Is she self-involved? I mean, I think that in the movie, like the context of the movie makes it seem like it's all about her. It's all about what she thinks and who she loves and who she cares about or what she cares about. But saying that she's self-involved from that is just merely to say that this movie's about her.
About her, yeah.
So,
I think this raises an interesting question about how you're supposed to assess movies like this that are based on character studies as opposed to sort of the way the film looks or sort of the way it's put together or the way that it's structured.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, a film can be a biopic that's a character study with an arc.
I want to show you this. This is just a couple of clips. This is a really bad YouTube compilation. And it shows the end scene first.
And play her love. Love is not the
phone.
Play, but a game.
Can you go get my phone, please, and turn it off?
Yeah. This is the very last.
She was in Huckabees? I don't remember her.
Yeah, she was.
About a white.
The movie is.
Shallow depth of field. Who made this?
This guy, the same guy who made Funny Games, his name is,
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, just... maybe just that's the almost first, that's all the way down.
That's the first scene of the movie where she's fighting with
him. Anyway, it's a very beautifully shot movie, too, and the acting is...
A lot of medium shots. Yeah. It kind of seems like TV, because it's a lot of medium shots.
The acting in it is just spectacular. The movie's really well put together. Mm-hmm. Unlike something like Two Guys and a Girl, which I thought, on any technical level, was just not interesting at all. I think there are reasons to be interested in the content of the film, but that seems to me to be a separate question.
It's easier than making you read the novel, or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to make him read a book too, huh? These are all prerequisites, right? Wow.
The novelization of Two Girls and a Guy.
You have to be able to run like a mile in at least 5 minutes. And
you do have the novelization of Men in Black downstairs.
Yes, I do. That up. Good stuff. Dodge those two people. They were the happy couple that represent difference in her. She's walking around a food court. Somebody's bumped into her. She doesn't like physical contact. Really bothers her a lot. She does have a big purse. That's not a euphemism.
It's part of the character.
Brian Dennehy? No. She's checking out the porno, something hardcore. Checking the bouquet on the...
On the cum rag.
On the cum rag.
It's vintage.
She doesn't smell it. She kind of inhales it, too.
Yeah, she's got...
Okay. She's got gloves on, though, so at least she's being sanitary.
Yeah.
Those don't look like very good desks. This is bad podcasting, because no one can see this. Anyway, go to YouTube and look up the piano teacher. Isabella Hubbard?
Isabella Huppert? It's actually Huppert, I think.
Huppert. Okay, do that on YouTube, people. You have to make this life livable. Look when you think I'm mad enough. When you see a glove, I take more than another river full. Yes, and I'll make it all worthwhile. I'll make your heart smile. Strange love, strange eyes and strange troubles. Strange love.
Gave my son his father's name. If someone up there counts souls, then we're even.
Can I do? Maybe just
the. It's the last line of the movie.
What do you guys think about just doing it in the kitchen? On the little thing.
You want to do it in the kitchen? Let's do it in the kitchen.
Because
are we still talking about the podcast?
Yeah.